This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is 9:31, a little bit late. We're concerned about mental health here. We every Tuesday talk to Dr. Judy Ho, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. Morning, Dr. Judy. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. How's Luca?
He is good. We just got back from a little vacation. So, yeah, he's just recovering.
Awesome. You know what I've been doing? I got a new dog. What I've been doing is loading a Nerf gun with a ball and shooting it across the yard, which is about 30 yards wide. And when he comes back, I give him a little treat, and it wears him out pretty quickly. I don't know if you want to try that with Luca. I'm just kidding. It's a joke. I'm just playing. Happy April Fool's Day to you. Do you suggest people make April Fool's jokes or not as a licensed clinical neuropsychologist?
I always think that they're fun, but, you know, some people can't take a joke, right? So I guess you have to know your audience.
Yeah, you know that because you own your own practice. If you work for somebody and you find yourself in human resources, you suddenly realize as you're sitting there at the conference table and you thought that was funny and you say, at the time, yeah, I guess I did, but certainly not now. Am I fired? Let's talk about World Happiness Country Rankings. The United States not doing so well behind Finland, Denmark, Iceland, Sweden, Netherlands, Costa Rica, Norway, Israel, Luxembourg, Mexico, Australia, New Zealand, Switzerland, Belgium, Ireland, Lithuania, Austria, Canada, Slovenia, Czechia. Is that a Russian country or is that, I don't know, UAE, what? It's a Russian country. I didn't know if that was a shorthand for Czechoslovakia. Countries, Dr. Judy, who can keep track of them? UAE, Germany, and the U.S. and the U.K. Why is the U.S. so unhappy?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. I actually recall the World Happiness Rankings, and we actually talk about it in a couple of my classes that I teach at Pepperdine. And there's usually six key predictors of national happiness. One is GDP per capita. So I think if we were going by that, you'd think that America would be very high up top. But the other one that's really important is social support. Do people really feel like they have someone to count on in times of need? And in general, if you're from a country where family structures are a bit close-knit, you're in much closer connection with your neighbors, the people in your community, you're going to score much higher on that. And I think that America overall tends to score a bit lower on that than other countries, especially because we're an individualistic country. Most of the times, one of the values that people hold is that we should be independent. And so it's just not like how it is in certain more collectivistic countries where it's just the norm that you see lots of people every day and that you connect with people, that sometimes you put your needs behind the group's needs because that's really what helps everybody to feel better. We're just not really used to thinking that way. So I think that social support is a big part of it. A couple of the other key predictors of national happiness, healthy life expectancy, freedom to make life choices, generosity, and then perception of corruption. So that's interesting, right? So a lot of countries are very corrupt.
Are you talking about the government of the countries or the institutions?
Yeah, I think that it's more about trust or distrust in society and government. But it's the perception, and that I think is the key. So obviously there's corruption everywhere. It's just the fact of life, right? But it's really your perception of how corrupt your country's government or society is. And as you know, Tommy, our country is in a lot of turmoil right now emotionally about the government. Everybody has such strong opinions. There's a lot of distrust. There's even some paranoia. I mean, sometimes there is something unseemly going on. Other times there may not be, but you still think that there are, and you're getting really worked up about it. So I think that could also play a role. And then I think it's just this idea of work-life balance, right? So even this idea of freedom to make life choices, this is one of the most important, like one of the six key predictors of national happiness. We have a lot of freedom in America, but a lot of people feel like, again, this is because of the cultural value and cultural norm, that they have to just be grinding really hard at work. There isn't the kind of work-life balance that there often is with some of the countries that are near the top of the National Happiness Survey. And so I think that, you know, those are, in my opinion, the main reasons why America is so much lower than we might expect.
One thing that does make me unhappy is when I'm fed wrong information. By Tim Zimmer in Master Control, Chechia is the name of the Czech Republic. Chechnya is in Russia. Thank you, Tim. I'm able to sound stupid on my own. I don't need your help, okay? I'm just kidding. Thank you. It sounds like Chechnya. I'm not ragging on you, Tim. I just wanted to clear that up for the audience. Dr. Judy, let's talk about the role of social support here. And somebody texted me 2 hours ago. And said they feel as though, because I knew you were coming on, we were talking about it, they feel as though, and it was a long test, I'll try to paraphrase it. Basically, have you seen these movies where the dive ships go and they leave the person alone and the dive ship is gone and they're all by themselves? They say that's how they feel in their life. You never seen those movies?
Okay. Cool.
You've never seen
them?
Yeah, they're diving, and then everybody loads up on a dive ship, and they miscount how many people the boat, and they go about, and a person's just left there adrift in the water, and nobody comes
nightmare.
And gets them. Yeah, it is a nightmare. And they said that's how they feel socially. I've seen a couple of those movies. That's why I knew what they were talking about. And they said that's how they feel, that they're out there treading water for as long as they can, and that nobody's coming. They have a family member that's occasionally like a plane that flies overhead to make sure they're still there, and they don't know what to do. So that certainly, exactly. That was my response. And when I saw that and thought about world happiness rankings, I thought, well, this person is certainly among the unhappy in the United States. So what would you even tell them to start? What? How? I don't know. I mean, you need more details, but generally speaking.
Yeah. You know, I think that in general, when people are feeling a bit, I mean, seriously adrift, this is a very good metaphor that this person just gave. It's important to remember that you don't need 1,000 friends. You don't need 100 friends. You don't even need 10 friends. You just need, you know, 1, 2, or 3 really quality people that you can have a deeper connection with. That's what we're talking about in terms of social support. We're not talking about you are best friends with all of the neighbors on your street. We're talking about people who actually really mean something, who you can really count on. And you may say, well, I just have literally no one like that in my life. And I think the goal is to really just start small and just try to cultivate one meaningful relationship at a time. So the easiest way is to start with the people who are already in your social circle and think about, well, is there somebody here that maybe if I put a little bit more effort in, especially if they were also, you know, going to respond in kind like that, that would result in a more meaningful connection with this person. And then just reach out to them and, you know, call them. Ask them out for a coffee or a lunch, like start spending more time with them, you know, but it does take you having to extend the olive branch a little bit because nobody can read your mind. Nobody knows that you want to have a deeper connection with them unless you do something about it. If you really feel like no one in your life fits that type of bill, then, you know, challenging yourself to join something in the community, join something like a volunteer activity, and try to meet some people who you might be able to establish a connection with that way. But
doctor, I scrolled down.
The easiest thing is to start with one person.
I scrolled down like 18 pages because I wanted to get this right for this person. And the text said, I feel as though my family left me behind, much like a diver whose boat leaves without him. And I don't know how much longer I can tread water. That was the exact text. So I don't know if that changes anything that I said earlier or not, but. So you're saying basically try to find somebody?
Yeah, just find one person to start. And it might not be the people that you thought it was going to be, right? So I think this person is saying their family is not there for them. And, you know, a lot of people end up creating their own families, mm-hmm. right? It might not be your family of origin. It might be other people that can try to fill that role. And I think sometimes the pain comes from, and of course you have to grieve that, you know, comes from, well, but my family should be the people who are the ones there for me. It doesn't mean it won't change at some point down the line. You know, things are not static. Sometimes people will say, well, it'll never change with my mom, et cetera. It's like, well, it's possible, but it's also possible she might, you know? So it's not necessarily that it's going to go on forever, that you have a strained relationship with your family members. But at least as it is right now, it's helpful to try to let go of that expectation that your closest inner circle should be certain people, you know, because that also adds to the perception of loneliness and sadness and not feeling connected.
Somebody texted in, tell that person go to a good non-denominational church. They'll be welcome and have more friends than they know what to do with quickly. So I guess that's an idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Volunteer,
exactly.
I would think, that with an organization, maybe volunteer with somebody, get to know somebody there. Doctor, do you do deep sea diving?
I don't.
Because I can tell you, the movie's open water, and they have like three of them, open water 1, 2, or 3, if you ever want to watch those. We'll take a break, come back. We're talking to Dr. Judy about ways to be happy. If you have any questions or comments, 504-260-1870, and I will ask you, you don't have to tell me your name or anything, but generally speaking, scale of 1 to 10, where are you when it comes to happiness? And I'll ask Dr. Judy when we come back, what is a reasonable expectation as we all matriculate through life as to a good number to be on the happiness scale? I think if you're hitting 6, you're doing pretty good, considering everything, but we'll see. 942, 18 till 10, more when we return. Tommy Tucker, WWL. 947, 13 till 10, couple of minutes left with Dr. Judy Ho, licensed clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast, instructor at Cal Pepperdine. I get that right?
At Pepperdine? Yeah, I'm a tenured professor there.
Tenured professor at, what is it? Cal Pepperdine.
Pepperdine University.
Pepperdine University. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Dr. Judy, for my ignorance.
No problem.
Let's talk about, somebody texted in and said, happiness is all about expectations. I cannot allow myself to expect anything from anybody, and that way I can't get disappointed. Thoughts?
Well, I mean, definitely, I think that's a tactic, but also don't not allow yourself to have some expectations. Sometimes that's okay. But I understand that. I do understand that as a coping strategy and as a personality trait where it's like, okay, well, if I just don't put a ton of expectations on someone, then I'm not going to be upset if they don't do what I want to have them do. But I do think that it's okay to have some expectations, especially if you communicate them to that person, right? I mean, I think that what's hard is if you expect them to do something and they have no idea what your standards are, and then all of a sudden you're upset and they're like, wait, why was that something I was supposed to do to make you happy? But if it's somebody that you trust and love and you want to say, hey, you know what makes me feel really special? If you do X, like, or you know what makes me happy? If you do this from time to time. If you tell that to them and then they don't do it, then at least you have a starting place to talk about it and to negotiate. But I think it's okay to have some expectations if you communicate them ahead of time.
See, and I'm going to play devil's advocate here and ask you, what would be the downside of not having any expectations? Because just from the logic, not emotional standpoint, it would seem, well, you can't be disappointed if you don't have any expectations. But if somebody does do something nice for you, then it will be even more enjoyable because you didn't expect it. Where's my thinking wrong?
Well, I would counter that. It's very natural for human beings, just the way our minds are built, to have expectations is actually what helps us to navigate the world. You know, like, what do I expect in this situation versus this other situation? And I think that when you say you don't have any expectations, it's really coming out of a place of trying to protect yourself. So even though maybe deep down you do have some expectations, you're saying that you don't. And so I think that it's just impossible for human beings to not have any expectations. Like, it's okay to have few. I think that makes sense. But I think just the way that our brains are, it's hard not to, because we're built that way. It's evolutionarily driven. You know, we have to be able to know what to expect so that we can navigate the world better and survive better. So I would just ask this person, are you being 100% honest that you have zero expectations of anyone in your life? Like, would you have an expectation that if you were in a life-threatening situation, that if you called somebody, they'd be there for you? Like, or do you really have not even that expectation of somebody that you care about?
I guess,
right?
I was looking at it, what they meant more, and maybe I'm wrong here. I interpreted it more as, you know, on a personal relationship, as opposed to, obviously, you expect the police to come if you call them. You expect the people at work to do their job, even if they tell you the country's wrong. You expect those kind of things. But when it comes to personal, expecting somebody to do this for you or do that for you, not in a work or public service kind of thing, but that's how I interpreted it, but maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, obviously, we can't ask this listener exactly what they mean, but right. I would say that in general, you know, people who don't say they don't have any expectations means that they don't actually feel like they can have someone they can lean on in hard times. So I just want to make sure that if that's the angle, then, you know, opening yourself up to saying, yeah, I do have some expectations of how I should be treated by the people that I love. And that is part of that perception of social support. That is a happiness factor index. So, you know, I think that it's okay. It's okay to have expectations, but making sure that they're reasonable and they're communicated properly. I just think that it's too hard to expect yourself to not have expectations of anyone. I just don't know how easy that would be, really, for every single aspect of your life, especially with the people that you cherish the most and are the closest to you.
Suppose, wait, I lost my train of thought here, because somebody told me to Google Pepperdine University, and I did. They pay you to go there?
They pay you? I mean,
you. I'm saying they pay you to go to work there?
Yes.
It's so beautiful, you should pay them. That's the only point I'm making. Real quick, before we leave, what is reasonable to expect in happiness in your life? Because it is about, you know, maybe, what do they say in sales, where you over-deliver and under-promise, over-deliver? What is reasonable to expect on a scale of 1 to 10 in everyday life to be happy? You're not going to be 10 all the time. That's not real.
No. No, exactly. No, you're not going to be a 10 every day. And it's okay not to be. I mean, that's the whole point of life. You're going to enjoy the 10s more when they happen only infrequently. Otherwise, how would you know the difference? And so, you know, I think that this is part of the problem, whether it's expectations of people that you love, like similar to what your last listener was just talking about in their text, or like expectations of your own happiness level every day. I think that we usually oftentimes overshoot it, you know, and it's really just about, well, am I able to do the things for myself or ask for help when I need to get myself to that slightly higher level of happiness today? It's okay that sometimes it's a 2, because things can happen sometimes, or maybe you struggle with clinical depression and there's going to be those days. But it's really about, am I able to kind of take a look, self-reflect, and say, here's what I can do to boost my mood a bit today, whether it's an activity I can do myself, a coping strategy that I know works, or reaching out to one or two people that I know always make me feel better if I talk to them or spend time with them. Like, it's just about having personal agency to change your happiness from moment to moment. And if you have that locked in, you're going to feel a lot better. And it's not really about the day-to-day, I have to be a 10 or a 9 or an 8, because human life, we're going to be up and down. That's just how it is. And so even just having that level of expectation is super important. And by the way, the happiest countries, they tend to know that a little bit more and kind of understand that concept. They normalize moderate expectations. So that's an interesting fact, right? Nordic cultures, always at the top of this happiness survey, they tend to normalize having a moderate expectation of life. So that's what I was saying about not having no expectations at all, but not having high ones, just having moderate ones. And also they prioritize contentment over constant striving. So it's not always about the hustle and bustle. Sometimes it's about just slowing down and say, I just want to enjoy the day. And that's okay. That doesn't make me a lazy person.
I enjoy the day. I'm happy when I talk to you, Dr. Judy Ho, licensed clinical neuropsychologist, tenured professor at Pepperdine University. Taking a break, coming back, WWL.